Hello, everyone in the podcast world. My name is Brianne Larson. I'm an English education student at Bethel University, and this is my first podcast entitled Examining Mythical Womanhood, a look at the molding of Penelope in Margaret Atwood's The Penelopeiad. Margaret Atwood's The Penelopeiad is a retelling of the Odyssey as a feminist-driven novel which parallels the mythical tale of Odysseus's journey home from the Trojan War with what realistic life was like for those left at home, particularly his wife Penelope and her 12 maidens. This first-person narrative is written in retrospect, as Penelope details her life from childhood to now, as she's held in the afterlife. The chapters are divided by a chorus of 12 maids in a very Shakespearean form, who use this opportunity as a chance to express their voices in a way they were never given before, the afterlife. As Odysseus was gone for over 20 years, Penelope was pressured to find a new husband and a new ruler for Ithaca. This pressure came in the form of men called the suitors, who showed up at her doorstep to eat and drink her out of house and home until she chose one man to marry. Penelope knew that Odysseus was not dead, and with her cleverness comprised a plan to keep the men at bay while she awaited his return. She began to weave a shroud for her ailing father-in-law to be buried in, and she promised the suitors that when she was finished, she would choose a new husband. Odysseus did eventually return, but in disguise. Penelope recognized him right away and decided to hold a contest for the suitors, knowing Odysseus would win. Odysseus did win the contest, and following his victory, he killed every suitor and hung every maid whom he believed to be unfaithful. This act of killing the 12 maids is what haunts him in the afterlife. The 12 maids haunt Odysseus by following him everywhere, and Odysseus chooses to leave Penelope over and over again in order to be reborn and temporarily escape the maids. Atwood poses two important questions in the introduction that she examines in the Penelopeiad after her reading the Odyssey. Quote, what led to the hanging of the maids, and what was Penelope really up to? I've always been haunted by the hanged maids, and in the Penelopeiad, so is Penelope herself. End quote. Many people claim that the Penelopeiad is a feminist novel. Margaret Atwood disagrees by stating, quote, I wouldn't even call it feminist. Every time you write something from the point of view of a woman, people say that it's feminist. End quote. I'm going to begin this potential discussion and book review by stating my personal view on feminism and exactly what I believe it means. The dictionary definition of the word feminism is, quote, the advocacy of women's rights on the basis of the equality of the sexes, end quote. Technically, I would believe this to be correct, but one thing that I don't think a lot of feminists believe that I do is that equality does not mean that everyone has to be treated the same. I still hold to the belief that women are different than men. True equality for both genders comes when respect is given in an equal amount. I think the same argument could be applied to racism. We can't ignore the facts and the differences between skin color and culture, but we are capable of holding the same level of respect for any and all colors and cultures. In the ongoing feminist movement, I see a lot of people fighting for equal treatment with fair wages, fighting against the sexual harassment that runs rampant in our culture, and the many other concrete examples of ways women have been and continue to be degraded in our culture. All of these things should be fought against. But something that should not be forgotten is the level of respect women should have for themselves and for the men in the world. The equality that is being fought for can only come when respect is represented from both sides. Dear listener, whatever your belief is on the feminist fence, I hope you can show grace and empathy when reading this novel. Atwood may or may not have written a feminist novel, but she did write a novel which examines womanhood as a whole and the different aspects that created a difficult life for the women during this ancient time. This is what I see as the core of the Penelopeiad, examining the womanhood of a wife left behind and the women who helped to mold her. One of the main themes that seems particularly linked to Penelope's womanhood is the female rivalry, jealousy, and competition she faces in her relationships with other women in her life. The first female relationship we see is the relationship between Penelope and her mother. This relationship is strained at best, with Penelope describing it as neglectful and cold. Quote, my mother, like all naiads, was beautiful but chilly at heart. She had waving hair and dimples and rippling laughter. She was elusive. When I was little, I would often try to throw my arms around her, but she had a habit of sliding away. I like to think that she may have been responsible for calling up that flock of ducks, but she probably wasn't. She preferred swimming in the river to the care of small children, and I often slipped her mind. If my father hadn't thrown me into the sea, she might have dropped me in herself in a fit of absent-mindedness or irritation. End quote. The next relationship we see is between Penelope and her cousin Helen, the same Helen who began the Trojan War and was, quote, the face that launched 1,000 ships, end quote. Helen and Penelope have a relationship based off of degrading comments and thoughts one would only see between enemies. Penelope describes the day of her wedding in her 6th chapter titled My Marriage. When looking over all of the men who had come to win her hand, her cousin Helen approached Penelope and her maidens. Penelope says, quote, at this moment, my cousin Helen came sailing up like the long-necked swan she fancies herself to be. She had a distinct way of walking, and she was exaggerating it. Although mine was the marriage in question, she wanted all the attention for herself. Quote, I think Odysseus would make a very suitable husband for a little ducky, she said. She likes the quiet life, and she'll certainly have that if he takes her to Ithaca, as he's boasting of doing. She said this lightly, but her lightly sayings were often her cruelest. Why is it that really beautiful people think everyone else in the world exists for their amusement? The maid snickered. I was crushed. End quote. Her relationships in no way improved when her marriage to Odysseus brought her to his hometown of Ithaca. Her mother-in-law, Anticleia, and her husband's wet nurse, Eurycleia, make it impossible for her to carry out her wifely duties. They point and jeer at everything she does, claiming she is always in the wrong and never in the right. This competition seems to be for the attention of Odysseus. This competitiveness may have begun between Anticleia and Eurycleia themselves before Penelope even entered the picture. Each one is vying to show who is the most important woman in Odysseus's life. All of this leaves Penelope extremely lonely and isolated. Her only female relationships in this novel that are positive are the ones she has with her maidens. The 12 maids are Penelope's most trusted confidants. These girls have worked for her and her family since they were born. Thus, Penelope developed a strong relationship with these girls at a very young age. With the strained relationships between Penelope and the other women in the household, the only people she had to lean on were these young maidens. The maids stood beside her during Odysseus's absence as she ruled over Ithaca, helped her in her plan to distract the suitors, and gave her comfort while her long-lost husband was away. She in turn comforted them, holding them and caretaking for them after they had been raped or scorned by the suitors invading Penelope's property. It was the culture at the time to offer one's maids to visitors to sleep with as a sign of one's wealth and generosity. The maids gave their perspective on this tradition in society by saying, quote, we were told we were dirty. We were dirty. Dirt was our concern. Dirt was our business. Dirt was our specialty. Dirt was our fault. We were the dirty girls. If our owners or the sons of our owners or a visiting nobleman or the sons of a visiting nobleman wanted to sleep with us, we could not refuse. End quote. Penelope seemed to know a bit about how it felt to be scorned, taken advantage of, or looked down upon, and I think this is why she empathizes with the maids. Eurycleia, though she was a maid herself, seems to dismiss when the maids get raped as a usual instance and not something to fret over. The treatment of these maids is what I believe Atwood is getting at when she says Penelope is haunted by them. One thing that I've noticed during this reading of the book was that Penelope doesn't do anything to stop the rapes from happening, though she's left in charge with her husband gone. And she even initiates it in a way by asking the maids to flirt and sleep with the men in order for her to gain information from them. Perhaps it is this lack of action on behalf of the maids that haunts Penelope into the underworld. Penelope's womanhood is defined by these relationships, the jealousy, the neglect, the grasping for justice, and the humiliation felt when her lack of action failed the women she loved most. These are the defining moments for Penelope, and I think they parallel some defining moments for women today. Unlike Penelope, we have more than just a handful of women to be jealous of. There are women we may not even know who create jealousy and contempt just by being a face we scroll past on our newsfeed. There are women in pictures and on billboards and on the TV screen, all inciting a jealous heart in us. The neglect is not too uncommon either between the one-parent homes, the divorced homes, and the broken homes that the women of today grow up in. The grasping for justice is also a pretty relevant issue, especially during this time where victims of sexual assault rarely gain the justice they deserve, and the men who incite these instances rarely get the punishment they deserve. And lastly, the humiliation felt When one's lack of action fails the women you love most is an extremely powerful emotion, and one I know I myself personally have felt, and I'm sure many of you listening may have as well. There's something very special and very rare about the bond between women, and when that bond is broken by an action or lack thereof, it is a heartfelt by both parties in the deepest of ways. Margaret Atwood may not have written a feminist novel, but she did write a novel which examines the life of a woman who experiences things that many women today experience themselves. The cultural relevance of this novel is too important not to ignore. There are many other issues that this novel examines and works through, just as a good piece of literature should. But examining the life of one person in order for other people to help understand their own lives is one of the most powerful things I believe a writer can do.